Welcome back to the Hollow Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday, Hollow Cult. You know what that means. Another start to the work week. Hope everybody made it through the good old American Independence Day with all of their digits. Everybody had a safe and fun time. Got to spend it with people you love. Doing dangerous shit. You know the drill. Today, since people want me to start like doing a little lead-in to keep you interested before we get through all the business, I'm diving into one of the OG cryptid, I don't know if it's a cryptid or an alien encounter, but it is one of the OGs. I've been kind of digging into these ones we haven't touched on yet, and stick around for it. It's a surprise until you get there. But first, we got to get through the business. So check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, Discord, Reddit, TikTok. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. Come and be part of the cult. Be part of the community. Just be cool. Hang out. It's a good time. Everybody has fun. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like for us to feature on a future episode of our Thursday listener experience show, Kyle's got some information you're going to want.
I do. It's all really easy. It's all in the show notes as well. If you get lost, confused, can't write it down, or your brain just stops. That happens to all of us. But all you got to do is write your story out, shoot it over to the email, which is going to be hollowskypodcast@gmail.com. And then we'll get it. We'll file it in our imperfect filing system. And then we'll talk about it on the show. You'll get your own dedicated show. So just please always send them encounters over.
Yeah, it's a good time. We like to talk about it. We like to hear about it, preferably from you. But I will go in and read it if you send it that way. And I'll do my best to make it as authentic as possible. I know Kyle is a big fan of like fictional podcast audio dramas. He listens to them a lot when he's traveling. I want to take this time to give a shout out to our friends over at the Mystery Frequency Podcast. They do kind of a suspense sci-fi thriller show, and we're going to throw in their stinger right here. So if you're into that, definitely listen to what our friends have to say and then go check it out.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
Turn your dial to find the frequency of the past.
Captain Midnight.
Where the classic stories of mysteries, sci-fi, thrillers, and suspense are found waiting to be heard once again.
Another case for Nick Carter, Master Detective.
You'll find a variety of those stories here, in their original form, where each episode takes you to another place or time.
The Man of Bronze, Doc Savage.
But only when you find the Mystery Frequency. Available everywhere.
The Shadow knows.
Again, thanks to the Mystery Frequency Podcast. Go and check them out. If you'd like to support our show, there's plenty of ways you can do it. You can go hit the Patreon. Everybody knows how that works. You get ad-free shows. You get early shows. You get extra shows. Casket Breath tracks. Coupons to the merch store. Speaking of merch store, hollowskypodcast.com. Go over there. Check out some of the merch. Pick up some hollow swag. Rep the hollow cult. You know how it goes. Best thing you can do is share us word of mouth. We appreciate each and every one of you taking the time to throw our name in the hat for anybody that listens to podcasts, anybody that's into weird stuff. It really does help. It really does help getting it out there. And that's the that's pretty much the best way you can do it at this point in the podcast world. So we appreciate you all. You can also go to wherever you listen to podcatchers and leave us a 5-star rating and review. When I find it, I will gladly shout you out. That's if I do find it. Keep that in mind. I'm trying my best here. So we're going to go in to this from our friend, GG2017. GG2017 says, 5 stars, perfectly, fantastically, epic, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. This is by far my absolute favorite podcast out of everything I've ever listened to. The guys make you feel welcome, included, and never cease to amaze with the wonderful banter and the obvious, thoroughly researched content. I will forever be a member, or I will forever be a part of the cult, which I never thought I'd ever be so happy to say I belong to. This podcast is hands down the best and worth every second spent with them as they inform their listeners about so many vastly different subjects. They truly know how to do better because they show it with each and every episode. Great job, guys. Much love, Wendy.
Thank you.
Wendy, as Kyle said, thank you for the kind words.
I love that.
We are glad you're here with us. We're glad you're having a good time. That's what we do it for.
Yeah.
Having a good time.
It really drives it home. It's much appreciated.
It does. And it is good to hear positive. I know we focus a lot on some of the negative shit that comes through, but it's always welcome when you guys come through and like just kind of boost our egos a little bit, you know? Yeah.
I'm waiting for the day that I see Hall merch floating around out in the real world.
Yeah, we had
on somebody that I don't know. And not at a convention. That doesn't count.
That's
purposeful.
Had people say that the other members of the Hollow Cult have yelled at them from across airports. So that's kind of wild.
That is pretty cool. But I'm waiting to see my first piece floating around out there.
It's going to be sick.
It'll be dumbfounding.
We'll get there. Manifest the Hollow Cult. That being said, I gotta cut this short. People are antsy to get into it. So as I said before, we are jumping in to one of the OG cryptid alien encounters in the US probably ever. It's probably in the top five, I'd say.
It's also funny because I myself have never like looked into it. I myself don't even know the full story.
It's strange. Now what was once kind of one of the most frightening encounters on record is actually became a source of revenue and tourism for a small town in West Virginia. This creature goes by many names: the Green Monster, the Braxton County Monster, Braxy, the Phantom of Flatwoods, but most of you know it as the Flatwood Monster. This encounter starts on September 12th, 1952. It was about 7:30 in the evening, and right as the sun was beginning to set on the small village of Flatwoods in West Virginia, the May brothers, Ed, 13, Freddie, 14, had been playing football in their local schoolyard with their 10-year-old friend, Tommy Heyer. As they're playing football out there, just throwing around, playing catch, you know, they noticed this thing in the sky. They described it as a giant pulsating red streak of light that shot across the field they're playing in. And they said they actually seen it crash onto the property of a nearby farm owned by a farmer named G. Bailey Fisher. This startled the boys so much that they ran to grab their mother, Kathleen. Kathleen was kind of a little leery about their story, but the boys were so adamant, like, hey, we've seen something crash. They didn't know if it was an airplane or what was going on. So as it's getting more dark, Kathleen's like, all right, go ahead and grab some flashlights and we'll go look at it. I guess the banter that was going on, it's a small town. I think it had like 300 people, so it's pretty similar to where I live. Once you get a bunch of kids kind of out messing around, other kids kind of see what's going on. So more kids started to join. One named Neil Nunley, who was 14. Ronnie Shaver, I believe he was also 14. And then Kathleen kind of called the little leader of the group, this boy named Gene Lemon, who had already signed up to be a member of the National Guard, was like, hey, can you bring your dog over here? We're going to go and investigate. My boys saw think they saw an airplane crash. We're just going to go and check it out. So Kathleen and this whole gaggle of kids start trekking up to where they said they saw this. The younger kids said they saw this thing crash. The two older boys are in the lead with the dog, right? So they're making their way to the vicinity of where this object landed. as they walk up, they start to see this weird pulsating craft and light in the woods. And they're like, well, this isn't normal. So it's dark, mind you, and they just have lights with their flashlights. All of a sudden, Gene is shining his flashlight to the trees as they're moving on when his flashlight beam passes this group of trees where he sees this set of green eyes reflecting the beam of the flashlight. He was like, okay, that's not normal. So he shines his flashlight back across where the eye shine was, and what he sees just like terrifies him. He reported seeing a, quote, man-like figure with a round red face surrounded by a pointed hood-shaped, like, cowl over its head. The body was seemingly colorless, and their definitions kind of differed because it was dark, but it would later kind of take on the state that the body was green. If you ever see the Flatwood Monster, it's got, like, a round face, and it's almost like a blood red cowl to it on this giant green body. Kathleen, the mother, who also saw the being, said that the body kind of had drape folds to it, like cloth, like it was wearing some sort of clothing, almost like an oversized dress. Of course, the descriptions varied between the children and the mother that was there. And in an article in Fate magazine, based on tape-recorded interviews that were taken with the local police department and UFO investigators, UFO writer Gary Baker described the... I don't know if I said his name right. Is it Gary Baker? Gray Baker. Gray Barker. Let's try that again. I can't read my own notes.
Please,
UFO writer.
Bob Barker.
Yeah, not Bob Barker. UFO writer.
I'm going with Bob Barker.
Gray Barker. Describe the figure.
That was Bob's brother. That's what it is.
Yeah. The figure did not go on The Price is Right. But Gray Barker described the figure as approximately 10 feet tall. Again, a rounded blood red face, a large pointed hood-like shape above the face, eye-like shapes which emitted a greenish-orange light. I've seen drawings where it was almost like a laser beam coming out of these eyes, and the body being dark black or green color. May Kathleen described the figure as having small twisted claw-like hands, which makes it even more creepy. And again, clothing-like folds in whatever it had on the outside of its body, and a head that resembled the shape of an ace of spades. So you can kind of get a picture of the cow-like hood over its head. So as they see this, Lemon starts stumbling backwards. He's like, what in the hell is this thing? As the flashlight goes back onto the creature, it starts to move toward them in almost like a levitating motion. Later on in the show, I'll get into the actual encounter that was put into Project Blue Book. And I'll read that for you guys because it kind of tells how the creature moved in that encounter. But again, it caused Lemon to fall backwards and drop his light. When he dropped the light, everybody was like, oh, shit, we need to get the hell out of here.
Well, so, yeah, now you can halfway see the damn thing.
Yeah. And they didn't even know, like, what the hell is going on. So you got the eye shine the flashlight on it. You see this thing that is like out of a sci-fi movie. All of a sudden, it's got green-orange lasers coming out of its eyes, and it starts levitating toward you.
So they definitely scared the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah, they just book it. They're like, we're not.
Like, sitting back here, is it me or, I mean, A, you hit it with a sci-fi movie, because I instantly thought of Star Wars. But to me, by per description, it makes me feel like whatever this thing was from, I feel like it was like an elder. I feel like it's described as an elder.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really think like that.
It's got like a holy garb, like a prominent garb on. And then the way they describe its hands, like very twisted, like almost like an old person with arthritis or something. You know what I mean? Like it's all twisted in. And
It's gross.
I feel like it's old, like an elder.
Yeah. And the fact, like,
and it's got laser eyes, so.
And it's 10 feet tall.
Yeah, yeah.
In the encounter in Blue Book,
Shaquille O'Neal was Cyclops.
Yes. Yes, that's terrifying. Spot on.
That's terrifying. Because Shaquille O'Neal is huge.
Yeah. Pretty much spot on. In the actual encounter, I'll read from Blue Book. They don't even say 10 feet tall. They said it's under 14 feet because they went back and measured the tree branch it was standing under, which was at 14 feet tall.
That's fucking huge.
That's a big alien.
Yeah, it would definitely not be fun.
No, especially if it's a laser beam in your eyes.
Yeah.
From their eyes, your eyes.
Even worst case, if it just could temporarily blind you.
Yes. So this whole group's booking it out of the woods. They're like, hell with this. Hell with Mr. Fisher's farm. We don't care if it's an airplane crash. We're getting the hell out of here. As they get back, they start to kind of turn it over to local authorities. They're like, hey, we saw some weird shit, right? We saw a UFO crash. There's an alien being out there. Somebody needs to go look at it. It should be noted that following their encounter, first off, a lot of the group talked about smelling a weird, strange smell, like, and they noticed a mist that was hanging out in the area of the crash, right? And after that, multiple kids and Kathleen began to suffer from throat irritation, vomiting, nausea, which persisted for multiple days.
That's weird.
It is weird. I also need to mention that I forgot that when that thing was levitating toward them, it was also making this weird hissing sound.
Oh.
Which kind of amplifies the fear.
Like, it definitely shows aggression.
Yeah. Yes. So, and it also makes you wonder if maybe the hissing was what was spewing out all this mist or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Or it could be from the craft itself, from, you know, some type of damage to the craft, releasing some type of toxin in the air.
Yeah.
Whatever it was.
Of course, these symptoms were almost immediately passed off as like a group hysteria upon seeing the thing, as it always is.
They like that description. It's another one of them pretty famous ones where, yeah, there's more than one. Ah, it was just group hysteria. It was a group hallucination. It was this, that, and the other. And you're like, okay, right.
Yeah.
Sure.
And you're kind of in post-World War. It's been a while, right? But also kind of in the middle of the Cold War, when the Cold War is starting to ramp up. So there's a lot of, like, still post-pre-war propaganda going on. You know, the Third Reich is done. Now everybody's worried about the communists coming in. And they did note that a lot of these side effects are the same telltale signs of exposure to mustard gas.
Well, that's interesting.
Which is crazy.
But either way, that should prompt authorities to fully investigate the situation.
Yeah, they do. So, like, the next day. Like,
at least they were in a hurry.
Yeah. You'd think if somebody said, hey, I think I saw a plane crash, maybe we should go check it out. But
so, hey, man, I got to get my nap in, okay?
Yeah. They said, I guess that's not entirely true. It says the local sheriff and deputy have been investigating the reports of a crashed aircraft in the area. When they reached the site where the reported monster was, they, quote, saw and heard and smelled nothing. According to Barker's account, the next day, this is what I was thinking about. A journalist, A. Lee Stewart Jr. of the Braxton Democrat, claimed to have discovered what he quotes as skid marks in the field in an odd gummy deposit, which he believed were left by the attributed UFO as evidence of the saucer's landing. It should also be reported that numerous people in a 20-mile radius saw, quote, illuminated objects in the sky at the same time, end quote. And it said objects
at the same time as the crash, or
yes, the same time they saw. So I'm assuming at dusk that time they saw illuminated objects in the sky. it's hard to tell because I kind of make a note here. It's almost like they're insinuating that there were multiple objects, meaning either multiple UFOs, multiple meteors, or like UFOs and possibly military aircraft coming in to check it.
Yeah. And I feel like in that situation, especially with so many of the first hand witnesses there being children, they most likely would have solely been focused on the object on its descent versus the other objects in the sky.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like that should be an easily figured out fact.
Yeah.
That you're not going to continue looking at the sky. You are going to follow that object all the way to the ground.
Yeah. And it just, I mean, it almost leads credence to what they saw because other people were seeing similar things in the sky as well.
Right. Which would also suggest that it's not out of the realm of possibility that these other craft in the sky didn't double as a recovery crew, a tow crew, whatever, however
you want to put
that. You know what I mean? Because it would be very, imagine how crazy that would be to witness that and investigate. And say you even spent, from the time it crashed, an hour reaching the destination, having your experience, and then you double back, taking maybe another 30 to 40 minutes, get the authorities involved, turn around and go back. So you add another 30 to 40 minutes and there's no sign of anything.
Yeah. You've essentially got a lot of time, especially like, cause that could go one of two ways. That could go other alien craft coming in to rescue their homie.
Or the military stepping in.
Or the military coming in, cleaning up.
Yeah. And cause it would be a decent response time, you know. You're talking several hours, which is long, but it's really not that long.
It would almost depend on if they knew that thing was in the sky before it crashed.
Right.
Yeah, so it was a pretty weird night, but this wouldn't be the only strange sighting in the area. Not the first or the last. Another sighting of a creature, almost similar in description, told Braxy, which is the Flatwood Monster, was reported by a Miss Audra Harper not long before the infamous sighting on Fisher's Farm. Harper claims to have seen the monster while walking through the woods near her home near the town of Heaters. Heaters is about 5 miles north of Flatwoods. Harper and her friend were walking to a nearby store. The road leading out of their property was pretty bad and rutted, so they decided to take a shortcut through the woods instead of walking down the road, which would have increased their trip time quite a bit. They said about a half a mile into their trip, they noticed a big ball of fire on one of the hills they were passing. Harper dismissed it, assuming that it was one of her neighbors fox chasing, which I don't know what fox chasing is, and if you need to use fire and set shit on fire.
I would assume it's what we think it would be, but I'm also with you. I don't know why that requires large fires.
I guess if you set an entire hillside on fire, the foxes would probably run from...
It would definitely drive them out, but I just feel like that's really irresponsible.
She said when she glanced back, she saw something unbelievable, that the fireball had vanished, and in its place stood a tall, dark silhouette of a man-shaped figure. Terrified, Harper and her friend ran, escaping among the rocks and boulders that were strewn all over the hillside. Which, here we have another encounter of what we assume is an alien being linked to weird fireballs.
Yeah.
In the sky.
I thought that too. And this, her encounter happened before the crash.
Yes.
That's because I was going to call, and I wouldn't say bullshit, but it would, I feel like I'm a little less likely to necessarily believe it after that encounter, because you're always going to have to worry about people kind of chasing clout.
Yeah.
A little bit, you know, but the fact that it was before the accident, I can kind of get behind that, because it wouldn't, it to a degree makes sense, right? You could have that these beings were here investigating, so on and so forth. Because we've had other encounters like the robot aliens, who seemingly when they showed up, they were investigating rocks and plants and shit like that. They were just very inquisitive during the time until they started releasing some weird gas that knocked homie out in the tree. So that's kind of weird now that I think about it.
It's fucking weird. It's weird. And
furthermore, not to interrupt, but furthermore, we've had other encounters where the entity coming out of the craft were, I want to say, like blonde haired dudes that claim to be communists.
and even Harmony Grove, old boy, when he grabbed the flute, noted that they had three fingers on their hands and they had claw like fingernails on their hands.
Yeah, that's true.
Stands out. It's weird. A second incident happened. Well, I guess this would be a third incident. The day after the main Flatwoods encounter, another strange sighting occurred near, ironically enough, not just a clever name, Strange Creek, which is about 20 miles south of Flatwoods. Reportedly, George and Edith Snitowski and their 18-month-old son were driving through the rural area between Clay and Braxton County on Route 4 when their car suddenly died. Mr. Snitowski attempted to restart the car to no avail. It was nighttime and the road was deserted. While the Snitowskis were trying to decide what to do, a foul and sulfurous smell filled the air and their baby began to cry. A strange bright light filled the darkness and the couple witnessed a 10-foot-tall creature hovering in front of their car. The description is similar to that of the original sighting, except that the monster was not wearing what is presumed to be the spade-shaped hood. Instead, its head was reportedly reptilian and bony. The creature dragged its lizard-like hands across the roof of its car before drifting away into the woods. As soon as the monster was out of sight, the car restarted and the couple sped away. Snitowski would later give the entire account in Mail magazine in July of 1955.
So it's an interesting description there. Similar, but not. But it makes me feel weird when they describe the vehicle stopping. Because you hear that in a lot of tropes with UFO encounters, right? But it's usually when the craft is around. And like we talked about in one of my last episodes, that it would be possible that the craft is able to produce a large electromagnetic field, which would fuck with the car. So now my thought process going to what if this creature actually does walk, but it has some type of technology on it that is creating him this floating effect that they're seeing.
Keep that in mind when I get.
And therefore, it's creating its own electromagnetic field, which is interfering with the vehicle.
Keep that in mind when we get to the actual write-up in Blue Book, because it's weird the way that Nunley described it, how it moved. Again, these encounters really started to pop off. News editor Mr. Holt Bryan quoted, "Newspaper stories were carried throughout the entire country. Radio broadcasts were carried on all major networks, and hundreds of phone calls were received from all parts of the U.S. National press services rated the story number 11 for the entire year." So it was...
That was popular.
A banger.
It's popular, and it's also interesting... I don't want to say attention span, the like conviction of people of the past, like when these types of stories hit, it caught like wildfire.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like it's not like in today's world where the government goes, "Hey, UFOs are real," and people go, "Okay,
yeah, cool."
See ya. Like it really did take hold. It captivated everybody in the country, essentially, because people from all over the country were fucking calling.
Yep.
And rightfully so. Like, it should. And then, like you said, and you're coming off a lot going on. You had the World War II, and then you have, like you said, the Cold War starting up. So there is a lot of fear already throughout the country.
Yep.
And then you have seemingly these 10-foot tall beings who are now, for whatever reason, investigating us, spending time on the ground. And people are, they're obviously concerned.
Yep. And I mean, think about the time period, 1952. You're not that far off of
Roswell.
Roswell. Yeah. UFO fever is still going on.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of your big main accounts are happening then. And
that's fucking crazy. That's wild.
Everybody is in a weird headspace, you know, because now, now nuclear war is a real threat. That's a real thing at this point. Everybody, because they said it wasn't too long before this happened that the Soviet Union tested their first nuke, showing that they had nuclear capability too. So everybody was up, like everybody was terrified.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's definitely warranted.
Yeah. It got so wild that a prominent minister from Brooklyn, New York, drove down to interview to see if they were being truthful, see if they were being honest. Papers from all over the country, Pittsburgh, everywhere, sent special reporters down to get on boots on the ground. All sorts of like hands-on journalism down there.
What a cool time to be alive.
Oh, dude, to be a journalist back then.
Minus the crazy shit within the world. But imagine how fucking cool that would be where they actually took that story like legitimate.
Dude, that's what I want this to turn into.
Yeah, that's fucking cool.
If it turned into Hollow Sky journalism, which I mean, we're kind of doing now, but we're not like on the scene investigating. Right. If there was a UFO sighting, they're like, Stephen Kyle, you need to get out to, you know, fucking Idaho to
fucking game on.
Yeah. To investigate this UFO crash. I'm like, all right, let's 100%. Rip it.
100% in. I would do that in a heartbeat.
The military just shot this out of the sky. I'm like, all right, let's go. Bet. Let's
go on our way.
We'll be there before they are. But it also, again, caught the eye of a bunch of Fortean writers and ufologists like Gray Barker and Ivan T. Sanderson, who also put boots on the ground to investigate. Interestingly enough, hey, Holocult, if you've been around a minute, you've heard us talk about Mood, an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door. Mood's found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you want. If you are new here, I'm talking about Mood.com. Mood has an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo HOLO. Forget the one-size-fits-all supplement that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood that you're looking for. Are you having trouble sleeping? Try the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies for a mind-soothing calm each night. You need an extra boost of energy, some mental focus? Try the Morning Delta 9 gummies. If you're having trouble concentrating, you need some deep focused and enhanced creativity, try the Mind Magic gummies. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. You can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood in usually as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your front door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned before, Hollow Sky listeners gets 20% off their first order with code HOLO. So head over to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use our promo code HOLO when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at Mood.com. And that's promo code HOLO.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Barker lived in Braxton County, where the account happened. So, before I go into theories or anything, I'll go into, I didn't really have a setup, the Project Blue Book document. So Barker's investigative notes were included in the files of Blue Book.
So this would be from the main encounter, essentially.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Where the kids and...
I didn't know if it was a separate encounter or if it pertained to the same one.
Yep. This is exactly from Barker's notes. This is the file. I'll probably share this with the Patreon. I'll pop it over there. I got some news reports I found too. They're kind of hard to read, but I'm going to try to spruce them up and pop them over there. Anyway, this is from the government actual Blue Book UFO report. September 14th, 1952, Hill near Sutton, West Virginia. According to Barker, seven witnesses. A huge globular mass was observed first down, then over the other side of a hilltop to the right, about 50 feet away, like a big ball of fire. One witness, a boy named Neil Nunley, said, quote, "It seemed to dim and brighten at regular intervals. He didn't know how large it was. Some said it was as big as a house. It's not clear whether a complete sphere was seen or a hemisphere resting on the ground. Nunley heard no noise. Others said it made a low thumping or beating sound, like someone hitting on a canvas. And there was another noise, halfway between a hiss and the noise made by a jet plane. Distracted by the globular mass, they did not see a huge figure standing to their left. One said he thought he saw animal eyes in the tree and flashed his light on them. 15 feet away, towering over their heads, was a vast shape of something like a man. The face, everyone agreed, was round and blood red. No one noticed a nose or a mouth, only eyes or eye-like openings, from which projected greenish-orange beams of light. The light beams pierced through the haze pervading the scene. In the excitement, some of the group thought the beams of light were focused upon them. Nunley was specific that they were not. They went out over our heads. The monster could not have been more than 15 feet tall, for it was under the overhang limb of a tree, and the limb was of that height. Originally, the group said a strange, nauseous odor resembling burning metal or burning sulfur. Under questioning, none could remember having encountered anything similar. It was finally described only basically as a sickening, irritating the throat and nasal passages. Quote, "It seemed to grip you by the throat and suffocate you." Nunley was definite about the thing's movement, although other accounts conflicted. All said it was moving toward them, but according to Nunley, he was describing as it was moving in an arc. coming toward them but circling at the same time. His description indicated that the being was following a circular path which would take it back to the craft. When asked to walk around the room where he was being interviewed and imitate the movement, he said, quote, "That is not possible. I couldn't move as it did. It just moved. It didn't walk. It moved evenly. It didn't jump." The witnesses departed immediately upon sighting the, quote, "monster," and no other observations were made. So that kind of leads to what you were saying about the being having some sort of possible, like, electromagnetic connection with the craft, because it didn't walk. And they said it moved in a circular pattern, almost like it floated, like it was making rounds around the craft. I don't know. It's
a weird way to describe something moving. Like, it reminds me of like a top that has started to slow down, and it does that like overlapping circle motion.
Oh, where, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you draw a pigtail, essentially. Yeah. It's still moving forward, but it does this loop while moving forward. It does make you think that it has some type of tech on it that's creating its own electromagnetic field, unless it is itself is capable. Also, it's one of the only times, I believe, where you've had witnesses describe an entity with two separate colors of body. On top of the fact, you don't hear very many encounters of green bodies. Like, everybody thinks alien is green bodied.
Yeah.
Right. But we don't hear that actual description very often.
No, most of the time it was a gray in color. And once like with the Hopkinsville, like once the little green men trope hit, everybody ran that.
Yeah.
Everybody that saw something, you know, it was little green man until probably the 80s when the grays started becoming the big deal.
Hot topic.
Right? Yeah. Kind of changed tropes a little bit. But it is like, that's wild to me that it is included in Blue Book, like an actual government, like, document, right?
Yeah, because it would make you at least contemplate the fact that they had people who investigated it and found enough evidence
to take the time story to put it in there.
To put it inside there. Because I know back then they did things differently than we do now. However, I still feel like you would be thorough with your job. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like you would just go, okay, I believe this guy. I'm just gonna put it in here just cause.
Yeah. Like, if you don't, if it doesn't hold any water, don't talk about it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's as easy.
Yeah, there would be no reason to do it.
I feel like it's kind of like things are now, that shit is happening and shit was happening, and they couldn't put the lid back on it. You know what I mean? Like, you have a town of 300 people, and almost, you know, 7 out of 300 is a pretty good percentage
of
people that saw something fucked up.
Yep. It's also, it makes me wonder how, like, because there was an initial description of more than one object in the sky. Because that's the way it was worded. Regardless, it is interesting as fuck to me that, like you said, once we hit a certain spot in time, the grays kind of took over all alien description. So what is up with these one-offs? Are these one-off, like, traveler situations where they're just out and about in the solar, you know what I mean? And they see this new planet and they drop in to kind of check it out, to investigate,
crash their fucking
shit, you know? isn't it kind of interesting to really contemplate that, how the biggest alien trope we have are the Greys. They're the ones that make the repeated visits. They're the ones that are kind of vested in our place of living. And you have these one, like these subtle borderline one-off cases of different species, races of aliens that make these little, like little visits, these little impacts.
Yeah.
And then they kind of, because I couldn't tell you, maybe there has been, maybe there hasn't, but it seems like that whatever race of alien this was, they didn't really have much desire in coming back.
No, and it was almost like they didn't have any interest in the people either. Like Nunley, they said they took Nunley's interview the most convincingly because he was the least emotionally distraught about it. He was very matter of fact about what he saw. Everybody else was freaking the fuck out because they just saw an alien. But they said he was just calm and collected. He's like, this is what I saw. Boom, 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 boom.
I'd be like, sir, you are a weirdo. Yeah. Thank you for your story, but you are a certified weirdo.
He was, you almost picture, because they said he was like 13 or 14 years old. You can almost picture like strange little kid being like, yeah, everybody else freaking the fuck out. Like we just saw this 10-foot alien shooting laser beams at us. He's like, no, it didn't. He's like, the laser beams clearly went over our head. He's like, it didn't walk. It didn't run.
He could have been in a state of shock too.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, he could have, because fuck would that be? It would just be so weird. Like, I know that I've seen things and experienced things in my life, but I don't know. Like, I don't even know where my thought process would be to consciously be. It's one thing to be laying in bed, I guess, and you wake up and you have this experience, because there's still a factor of in your mind, maybe I dreamt it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Whereas this, like, you were consciously walking towards something that fell out of the fucking sky. And then all of a sudden you see a 10-foot tall thing
that's big
hiss at you and start circle running towards you.
Yeah. And I mean, being that age, like, you have to consider the time period where everybody's up in the air about everything.
Yeah.
You could have thought he was doing a service to the entire country. Like, I got to get my shit. I got to get my facts straight. I got to put them out there. I got to get them to these people who are interviewing me. Got to get it there and get it going. So, being totally transparent here, we have to kind of jump into the theories, which you're going to see these coming from a mile away. And we'll kind of go from there. We're also going to kind of touch back on Mr. Barker a little bit toward the end here. So bear with me. Some of the theories. After investigating the case in 2000, Mr. Joel Nickel of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry concluded that the bright light in the sky reported by the witnesses on September 12th was most likely a meteor, and that the pulsating red light that was seen was likely an aircraft navigation or hazard beacon, that the creature described by the witnesses closely resembled a... What's one thing that people always say the aliens are?
A weather balloon?
An owl. Close. What? Don't you remember? That was the same thing in the Goblins. Remember? The owl perched in the trees. Like, these, think about, yeah, this.
How the fuck do you equate a 10-foot tall thing with an owl?
Dude, that's what I said. I said, you have these UFO alien skeptics taking 3-foot tall green goblins and saying, clearly looks like an owl. Then you have the same group saying, this 10-foot tall ace of spades looking giant laser beam shooting ass elder being.
Yeah.
Also probably an owl.
Dude, I'm sorry. That's dumber than saying it was a weather balloon.
He tries to defend himself here in a little bit.
Well, please don't, because...
Dummy.
The only thing you're good at is licking windows, man. Get out of here. That's a dumb fucking statement. Who was he again?
Joe Nickel of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. So it's his job to...
Dude, I was getting
ready. Dumb shit.
The fact that skeptical is in your job title.
Yeah.
That's kind of
Just
an obvious here.
Say you're not here to believe us.
Yeah, exactly.
Nichols suggested the witnesses' perceptions were distorted by their heightened state of anxiety. Nichols' conclusions are shared by a number of other investigators, including those of the Air Force.
Oh, of course the Air Force is going to fucking agree with you because they're trying to cover everything up.
Yeah, they've already got the being and the alien in a hangar fucking 50 miles away. Yeah. Of course they're going to be like, yeah, it was an owl. A meteor hit an owl and turned into this.
And yeah, people would have higher anxiety if they thought they would, even if they just thought they witnessed a plane crash.
Yeah.
I 100% agree with that statement. However, bro, to just fucking in the 50s, just come up with the fact that this thing's 10 foot tall, looks like a Star Wars character, and has fucking laser eyes.
I've been in some pretty high anxiety situations, and I've never seen a 10 foot tall laser beam eye UFO crashing driving alien.
Same.
That's what that boils down to.
Just fucking do better.
He's basing it off of a lot of circumstantial evidence, I think. Right?
Yeah, and I would even say he's grasping hard.
So the night of the 12th, when the sighting occurred, a meteor had been observed across three states, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. According to Nichol, there were three flashing red aircraft beacons also visible from the area, which he said accounts for descriptions of the pulsating red light, also the red tint of the face of the monster, and the accounts that the other people saw of multiple lights in the sky.
The red tint of the face is nothing more than a light.
An airplane beacon on top of a tower.
Oh, okay.
Yes. No.
What? Is he saying the light was reflecting off of the face or that the face was the light?
No, the light was reflecting off of the face of the monster.
That's what gave the monster its
red tint.
Okay, if that was the case, we'll run with that. If that was the case, by proxy, wouldn't everybody else's face be red?
Yes.
And the entirety of the alien body would also then therefore be red.
Yes.
Okay. I'm glad we cleared that up.
Yes. And it's just a catch-all. He's like, the pulsating red light they seen across the sky, it was these airplane beacons. It could have been a meteor, but it also these beacons. All the other lights everybody saw in the sky, these beacons. Like the monster face was red. These lights are red. I'll tell you what, we've got airplane beacons here in town. I don't know how high up I have to get for them to tint my face red, but I can tell you it ain't going to be on the ground.
Yeah, right. Right. Because if that was the case, they wouldn't put them near houses and shit. It would be too bright.
And the airplanes wouldn't see it because it's on the ground.
Yeah. That is so stupid. That is just the dumbest fucking analogy. Like, he just walks into the scene and he's like, well, everything has one thing in common. The color red. Obvious connection. We're gonna tie it all together in a perfect little bow here. And I figured it out.
It gets bad.
Not to mention, last time I checked, those lights don't move.
Yeah. Right.
They're stagnant. They don't just fall to the ground. They don't move across the sky. They stay in one spot. That's their job.
Kathleen probably saw those airplane beacons a thousand times living in town.
Guaranteed.
And never once mistaken them for a UFO.
Yeah. Yep.
Do better, Nichol.
You know what? That is also awesome of the time. Like, imagine how dominant, if we were able to do this podcast in the 50s, we would run train on everybody.
Yeah.
Because their explanations and cover-ups were weak at best.
Yeah, I'd say they're
fucking bad. They were bad shit. Yes,
that is an underutilized insult that I'm going to bring back. Dipshit.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%. It is ridiculous. Some of these cover stories are asininely stupid.
But this bro put this out in 2000.
Oh, well,
missing case in 2000.
then that makes you even dumber.
Yeah. So Nickel concluded that the shape, movement, and sounds reported by the witnesses are also consistent with the silhouette, flight pattern, and call of a startled barn owl perched on a tree limb, leading researchers to conclude that the foliage beneath the owl created an illusion of the lower portions of the creature, as the pleated weird green cloth, like a pleated skirt, that was trees and leaves. Researchers also concluded that the witnesses' inability to agree on whether the creature had arms, combined with May's report of it having small claw-like hands, which extended out in front of it, also matched the description of a barn owl with its talons gripping a tree branch. You know what also matches? Tyrannosaurus Rex arms. So maybe they saw a T-Rex.
That's true. I can get behind that theory.
Another skeptic, Ryan Hupt, said a local boy that he had interviewed, Max Lockhart, admitted that he had driven around the site hoping to see something after the initial encounter in his Chevy truck. Paranormal investigators concluded that the tracks, oily residue, and bits of rubbery substance must have been left by the creature. Well, Hupt explains, it probably came from this kid's truck.
Of course, yeah.
Right?
I love how it's just considered a common thing that vehicles just drive around in the woods leaking oil everywhere.
Yeah, and goopy everything else.
Yeah.
Hupt also explains that the nausea reported by some of the witnesses were a symptom consistent with hysteria and overexertion.
Oh, man. Like I said, it would be a time to be alive or to go back and listen to people that legitimately covered up things. Either that or you're so... Would narcissistic be the word? You were so confident in your own intelligence that you so carelessly wipe all of this under the rug. You have to be borderline narcissist to just be like, listen, guys, listen. It was a light shining on an owl face that had a tree underneath it, which made it look like it had a cape on. Okay.
Yeah.
And its arthritic hands were actually wrapped around a tree branch.
The arthritis owl.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what made it look like it had the arthritic hands.
Yes.
I just feel like that is
stupid.
What someone who thinks that they're smart would say, even though they're not smart.
Yeah.
Because it's a really dumb series of explanations.
It
really is.
Yeah. And I know it came at a later time, but I feel like it was probably already put out there at the time these people were seeing it. Like, oh, it was just an owl, it was just this, that, and the other. And I feel like it's just people writing off, almost like the Hopkinsville encounter, almost like people just writing off people for being, you know, considered less smart. You know, you have this tiny little village in West Virginia, 300 people in it, and they saw this thing that they cannot explain, and they're like, let's just talk over them. Let's just one-up them.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a good point that you have people, which is fucking amazing, but you have people that equate intelligence to town size as well.
Yeah.
There's only 300 people in that town. They are all dumb.
Yeah, and I feel like Appalachia almost gets, I don't know exactly where Flatwoods is, but I'm pretty sure that it's in the area. I feel like Appalachia gets this unfair kind of stigma about it, of it just being like mountain people and their backwoods and all this other stuff. They almost get wrote off.
Oh, for sure.
When it comes to that.
For sure. Like I said, it's just such a dismissive way to approach an entire situation. I feel like, cause I can just see them now. The people that walk around like their shit don't stink.
Yep.
you know, just utterly dismissing everything that everyone has witnessed and experienced to have, like, they're not even real suggestions. Like, they're not at all.
No. Nope. It is. It is almost just like downplaying it. It's almost an insult. You know what I mean?
100. That's how I view it. Absolutely. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah. So before we go here, I'm going to go to Wikipedia and talk to you about Gray Barker, because he was the main guy that took all of the information down, main boots on the ground investigative person, and he is a very controversial and well-known member in ufology.
I'll call it right now before you get to it. He was Bob Barker's brother.
Bob Barker's brother. The Price is Wrong, bitch.
Yeah, he didn't make it for The Price is Right because his brother beat him out for the job. So second best option, paranormal investigator.
Yes. Yes.
Where I'm
yes,
at with it.
Yes.
I'm glad I got that right.
I'm just going to read the wiki and I'm just going to leave you to your own conclusions, right? Gray Barker, born May 2nd, 1925, passed away December 6th, 1984, was an American writer best known for his books about UFOs and other paranormal phenomena. His 1956 book, They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, introduced the notion of the men in black to ufology. Recent evidence indicates that he was skeptical of most of the UFO claims that he investigated, mainly wrote about the paranormal for financial gain. He sometimes even participated in known hoaxes to deceive more serious UFO investigators. So.
There was a fucking plant.
Douche.
Let's talk
about his life a little bit. He was a native of Riffle, Braxton County, West Virginia. So he was right in Braxton County when the sighting occurred. In 1952, he was working as a theater booker in Clarksburg, West Virginia, when he began collecting stories about the Flatwood Monster, an alleged extraterrestrial reported by residents near Braxton County. Barker submitted an article about the creature to Fate magazine, and shortly afterwards began writing regular pieces about UFOs for Space Review magazine. In 1953, Albert K. Bender abruptly dissolved the organization that hosted Space Review magazine, claiming that he could not continue writing about UFOs because of orders from a higher source. After pressing Bender for more details, Barker wrote his first book, They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, which was published by University Books in 1956. The book was the first to describe the Men in Black, a group of mysterious figures who, according to the UFO conspiracy theorists, I use that term with a smirk, intimidate individuals into keeping silent about UFOs. Barker recounted Bender's own alleged encounters with the Men in Black, who's said to travel in groups of three, wear black suits, and drive large black automobiles, usually Cadillacs. In 1962, Barker and Bender collaborated on a second book on the topic called Flying Saucers and the Three Men, published under Barker's own imprint, Saucerian Books. The book proposed that the Men in Black were themselves extraterrestrials. Over the next two decades, they continued writing books about the paranormal, one of these being 1970's The Silver Bridge, which linked the collapse of the Silver Bridge in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, to the appearance of an alleged paranormal creature known as the Mothman. I found this interesting. That's why I'm even talking about it. The book preceded John Keel's The Mothman Prophecy by 5 years. Before dying in 1984, Barker wrote a final book called The Men in Black, The Secret Terror Among Us. He was a kind of a subject of two documentary films, Whisper from Space and Shades of Grey, which you can find. Again, I just want to touch on that he was a prominent figure in ufology and investigations, but after he passed away, it kind of came forward that not only was he doing some of this stuff for financial gain, but he also kind of tongue in cheek didn't believe a lot of the people that he interviewed. So it's almost like he was almost a blessing and a curse to ufology, because he helped put the stories out there and get them out and get them well known. But at the same time, he was also participating in known hoaxes to try to dupe real scientists, real ufologists that were putting boots on the ground trying to prove that these things exist. So I just wanted to tell you guys that, so you kind of take it with a grain of salt, right?
Yeah, you have to at that point.
Yeah.
You can't trust a guy that is constantly trying to muddy the waters for his own self-gain.
Yep. Oh, I'm going to jump back to Wikipedia here. If there's anything that came positive of the encounter, is that it kind of produced some tourism for the small town. Like, cause you don't got a whole lot going on. It's probably in West Virginia, it's probably a coal mine town or something like that. But officials erected a giant sign designated the town as the home of the Green Monster. The town commemorates the legend with its annual Flatwood Days Festival, which would be cool. I'd love to go and check that out. It's still going on. Located in the town of Sutton, Braxton County seat is the Flatwood Monster Museum, which is dedicated to the legend. The Braxton County Convention and Visitors Bureau also built a series of five tall chairs in the shape of the monster to serve as landmarks and visitor attractions. The Bureau rewards visitors who photograph all five chairs with free Braxy stickers. The legend of the Flatwood Monster also inspired media beyond West Virginia. Video games like Fallout 76, Everybody's Golf, and The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask contain possible references to the legend. In television, the second episode of 2019 History Channel's Project Blue Book titled The Flatwood Monster is based on the Flatwoods incident.
I love the fact that the town like adopted it.
Oh, I'm me too, man.
I think it's awesome.
It is cool.
A part of your history you kind of push to the forefront and you're like, yeah, we're going to own this.
Me too. It makes me feel like the Paisaw Bird. You know, yeah, I know it's not our exact town, but it is a part of our culture here, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because there's basketball, school teams, the Paisaw Birds, and all kinds of cool shit. So I think it's awesome.
I think it's awesome. It not only is it awesome because of the subject matter, but it's like it's just a homage, like paying homage to the history of your area. And I don't know. I feel like it's just really fucking cool.
It is cool. It's taken something that was terrifying and ultimately kind of negative and turning it into something positive for the whole town.
Yeah.
And I fuck with it. Sure.
Yeah, I'm with it. I think it's badass.
So that's kind of the story that I put together for today. A little bit of the information, some sources I got. Braxton, if you go to www.braxtonwv.org/the Flatwood Monster, I use that. I also went to the Skeptical Inquirer, looked up their kind of take on it. Historychannel.com I used, a bunch from Wikipedia. There's a lot of information out there. You could sift through it. There's tons of news articles you can find, like OG news articles. A lot of the ones I find are hard as F to read because they're scanned so shitty, but they're out there. The ones I find, I'm probably going to post to the Patreon, a little extra content over there, but it's interesting. One of the OGs, it makes you wonder, cryptid or alien, can they cross over?
Yeah.
Especially.
I feel like it's very alien, but
yeah, I feel like it gets lumped in the cryptid scene because like, now that I find out, because I had no idea there were multiple sightings of something fucking weird, it almost makes it feel like there's something lurking in the woods, you know, because multiple people saw it. But I didn't know that it had an encounter where it was reptilian, almost like it could have been wearing a hood or some shit. Like it's weird.
It is a weird story.
Yeah.
It's a weird story, but it is a big story. I'm glad we got around to it because, like I said, I've never officially heard the entirety of the story. So
I'd like to make... If I had the time off work, I would love to make a run through some of the weird places in Appalachia.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Weird shit.
That would be, because it's a different level of weird there.
Yeah, that's old weird.
I was literally getting ready to say the same thing. Old
that's
weird.
That's old weird, bro.
Yeah, and I fuck with that.
Yep. Well, thanks again, Hollow Cult, for hanging out with us, listening to another weird story. Hope this gets your work week going. Hope everybody stays safe. Everybody has a good week. Again, check out our friends at the Mystery Frequency Podcast. Go hit that up if you need a break from the possibly factual weird and you just like some good old time radio fiction suspense. Check them out. Check us out at all our social media, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter. You know the deal. And until we meet again, stay safe. Stay weird. and the owls are never what they seem, especially if the skeptics and the government are trying to tell you that they are.